there's more I can share with you, but I'll circle back if there's more to convey. I'll have to just circle back with you. We can circle back. I'm happy to circle back. I can circle back.
Well, I will have to circle back on that one,
but I'll have to circle back.
We'll circle back.
Circle back.
Certainly circle back. I will have to circle back on that one.
I hate to disappoint you, but I will have to circle back with you on that as well.
White House spin doctor Jan Psaki there laying down a track.
G'day, welcome to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 188th Mary Queen of Scots. My name's Dick Newman, and don't you miss that Kayleigh McEnany and the Republican bullshit. The Republicans said, this is bullshit, you know it's bullshit, I know it's bullshit, but we're putting it out there anyway, because a fair whack of people in America believe that Hillary Clinton is running a sex child trafficking ring underneath a pizza shop in Ohio, and they'll believe this bullshit, so let's just move on with the bullshit. Whereas the Democrats want to say, oh, look, our bullshit, we know it's bullshit, but if you take a deep breath in, it smells like hope, and what's that? Strawberry ice cream, you say? Yeah, it smells like strawberry ice cream. So if we could all just hope, believe, smile, and say, this is strawberry ice cream, then we can get on with life. So well done, Jan Psaki, with your Democrat-flavoured strawberry bullshit. For the rest of us, let's circle back. Just a little bit of Mozart there, Piano Sonata number 14 in C minor to get us underway. Mozart, of course, being the Jimmy Page of his day. Now, last week, there's three big takeaways, weren't there, from last week? Mary Guise died, sad, leaving Mary Queen of Scots and France and perhaps England as an orphan. We then got into the big old scandal with Robert Dudley's Mrs. Amy Robsart having an up-close and personal run-in with a set of stairs. Was it murder, suicide, or just an accident? The case is closed with the official verdict being an accident. But the smell of the whole affair put the end to any thoughts of Betty and Dudley marrying. Then we finished off with a look at the bloody religion. Oh, dear me. All that talk about religion did my head in, so I made a pretty rash promise to you, saying we're going to have a look at Francis Walsingham this week. Trouble is, it was really a bit early for him to come in, and we have to remember with Sir Francis Walsingham, he's a spook. We're not really supposed to know much about him. It's all secret stuff. Still, I made you a promise, and a promise is a promise, so it's time to meet a new cast member in our long-running saga. Sir Francis Walsingham, come on down. Sir Francis was born around 1532. That makes him about 28 right now. His dad, William, was a London lawyer who owned big estates around Kent with his Mrs. Joyce, daughter of Sir Edmund Denny of Cheshunt, Hertfordshire. She was sister to Sir Anthony Denny, who had been chief gentleman to the 8th Henry's Privy Council. That made Sir Anthony one of those guys who did the skullduggery stuff with Henry's will. That's an uncle on Francis's mum's side. On his dad's side was Sir Edmund Walsingham, who had fought against the Scotties at Flodden and become Lieutenant of the Tower of London. Before that, we can have a nice list of Walsinghams, with some being knighted. All invented during the reign of our Elizabeth, perhaps as a gift to Francis, but his ancestors in reality were common and smelly. Yeah. 1403 saw shoemaker Alan Walsingham buy some tenements in London. He turned out to be pretty good at the slumlord thing, which allowed him to buy more property. He'll end up with a mansion house. Think of a large house or a small mansion. And a brewery, that's nice. And an alehouse, the Cock and Hoop. His son Tom will be a merchant and get into the import-export trade. Tom will marry a daughter of a goldsmith, that's scored nicely there, whose family included a couple of former Lord Mayors, and the Walsinghams are respectable. Still common, but less smelly. Tom will manage to buy a real mansion in Kent, which will be the family home. The sons will all be into the wine trade, and then Francis Walsingham's granddad will hit the jackpot transitioning from merchant to gentleman and getting the marvellous coat of arms. We've made it to the top rung of the common smelly type's ladder of success. His younger son, William, will train as a lawyer and be appointed Commissioner of Peace in Kent. William will then be one of three commissioners appointed to investigate Tom Wolsey. Shit, he's back in the story again. That bloody Wolsey won't die, will he? That will be a stepping stone to the Under-Sheriff of London gig. He will do well as a lawyer, and that will help him buy some nice real estate in London as well as manors in Kent. It's going well, isn't it? So he can die young, leaving a 27-year-old widow with five daughters and 2-year-old Frances Walsingham. She'll remarry, so don't worry. Frances will be off to Cambridge at 16. Seems like he'll study but not bother with the getting of a degree thing. He'd rather travel. The School of Life. The School of Life will teach him languages, customs, laws and foreign policies. Having had a nice gap year, he will enrol at Gray's Inn and looks like he's following in Dad's footsteps into a life of law. Yeah, that won't actually happen. Ten King, Ted will die, and by the time Mary starts her nice program of burning humans alive, Francis has decided on Europe again. He's one of those Protestants who's going to run away. We'll find him again in 1555, so that's 5 years ago for our podcast, and he's in Padua in Italy, where he'll be elected representative for the English students studying civil law. He won't be there for long, and will go to France, Switzerland and Germany before heading back to England when Mary died. 1560 is where we should be, and that will see Frances Walsingham's mum die. Oh. Frances is now considered to be one of the best linguists in England. He's fluent in French, Italian and Latin. He's a firm Protestant, and he's got a nice elaborate coat of arms with the motto, Ospicanti Dio, with God being propitious. What he needs at his age is a missus. And here's Anne Carlyle, widow of a London wine merchant and daughter of haberdasher Sir George Barnes, formerly Lord Mayor. And actually, that's where we need to leave Francis. That's not a bad place. He's courting Anne Carlyle, so happy times for him. But what we want to know, is it all happiness for Catherine de' Medici? She's in that triumvirate of rulers of France with Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles. The economy is stuffed and life is not good for ordinary types. So it's a bad time for us to go, but let's go to France. Yeah, a little bit of Les Miserables there, and that could be set any time in France's history, couldn't it, really, with the life being shit for the ordinary types. Worse for him at the moment is that Cardinal Charles is going for simplistic policies that may not work. In fact, they won't work. He's cut expenditure with payments due on debts not being made and the super scary failure to pay the army. Any criticism of Cardinal Charles will be treated in a Trump-like manner. Immediate punishment. As well as economic problems, France is having religious problems with Cardinal Charles just upping the nastiness against Protestants as his solution there. Catherine de' Medici had lots of friends with Protestant sympathies who were not active reformers. These guys are appealing to her for a softer line or for her to help them if they're in trouble. She's telling them, look, live quietly, just do your magic stuff secretly. A guy, an aide de Bourg, will be strangled and burned as a heretic. Protestant preacher Francois Morel will write a harsh letter to Catherine that God will come for her and her family. See, now that's a stupid idea. That's upset the powerful supporter of the moderate Protestants. Catherine sees that letter as treason, and fair enough, it is treason, threatening the Queen Mother and the royal family. Cardinal Charles will continue to up the nastiness with Catherine saying, hey buddy, look, this is going to end badly. Catherine is either not willing or able to help out, so the Protestants are going to need a new champion for their cause. They will look to that Antoine de Bourbon, who we may recall was a bit useless. But he's got a brother, Louis de Condé, who is a bit more inspiring. He's as cheesed off with Antoine as everyone else, and as a second son, he's lacking in cash. So his personal ambition, family pride, and a bit of religious conviction will show him that becoming leader of a religious cause may be good for him. His biggest problem, though, is that only the elder sons are considered to be able to claim anything like a regency, so he can't get that far. Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles can become even more unpopular by saying, "Hey, Trips, time for you to go to Scotland." Catherine de' Medici will find herself on the outer again. She thinks this going to Scotland is a bad idea. "We can't afford it and we may need our troops at home. This could be a disaster for France." Meanwhile, Kitty King's snot-nosed Frankie is not getting any healthier. He's now getting dizzy spells and will find himself losing consciousness. That's not a good sign. His skin is blotchy and his face has boils and pimples and his face is swelling as well. He's gotten taller, but that seems to have weakened him. To try and take his mind off all this, he's hunting as often as he can. Frankie Snotnose will get an abscess of the ear. Oh, it's a terribly painful thing. Doctors recommend rest in the country, so off we go to Blois. Mary Queen of Scots had also developed ill health. She's having fainting spells. If we toss in that Frankie Snotface's testicles have failed to descend into his ballsack, then the prospects of an heir to the big chair are just a bit slim there. And you can't keep this stuff secret. France has a sickly, weak king and a queen who is also unwell. They are the nation, so the nation must be sickly with these two in charge. As well as worrying about a sickly son, Catherine de Medici will also have to say goodbye to two daughters. Elizabeth is off to Phil of Spain. Claude is off to be Duchess of Lorraine. And at the same time, her sister-in-law, Marguerite, will also be off to be the Duchess of Savoy. At least Claude will have a happy marriage with Charles III of Lorraine, and there will be visits back and forward, so Catherine will be in touch with them and her grandkiddies. Catherine will delay Elizabeth's departure for Spain as long as she can, but eventually the 14-year-old will have to go, with Catherine doing lots of boo-hoo-hooing. Catherine will write lots and frequently to Elizabeth and will take comfort that Phil, who would be 20 years older than Elizabeth, will fall madly in love with her. And Elizabeth will describe herself as the luckiest girl alive. And there you go, lady listeners. One of those rarest of rare things, a happy princess story. And while you're all going crazy for Elizabeth, let's just remember that Phil was noted for being dour, pedantic, humourless, and a man who saw himself as exterminator of heresy, happy to light the bonfires himself. But for now, the good news is we'll be having happy relations between France and Spain.
Q is a patriot. We know that for sure. Again, I don't have any proof of this, but we're talking about who is Q, so I'm going to tell you what he says. Many in our government are actively worshiping Satan, or they call Moloch. Q is saying that they participate in pedophilia.
Whoops, my bad. Went to the wrong Reddit room for the conspiracy theories. Let's get out of the Democrat baby-eating devil worshippers and into February 1560 with the secret Reddit conspiracy where a plot is being hatched against the Deguises, Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles. Of course it wasn't Reddit. It was a meeting in the Huguenots, which will give the Protestants their name in France, the Huguenots, something like that, Huguenots. The reformers under Louis de Condé want to seize the brothers, put them on trial and liberate the king. Louis de Condé wants his name out of it, so the former de Guise man, La Rinaldi, who's turned against them, in charge of this kind of bit of rebellion thing. He's off to Switzerland to get John Calvin on board. Calvin won't have anything to do with it, but his man, Theodore de Bise, is in. It sends secret messages out to recruit hard men, and they will even get in touch with our Betty. Now, Betty may have sent money, we're not sure, but more likely she just sent moral support. That's way cheaper. The date for the rebellion is set for the 10th of March, but the surprise motherfucker thing is out the window. Hard to keep stuff secret on Reddit. Cardinal Charles was even given the news by English Catholics who'd heard of the plot. Everybody seems to know about it. A German prince will confirm the story for the cardinal. For Catherine and the de Guises, this is big. They're pretty sure that it's Betty who is retaliating against their support for Scotland.
Catherine will write to Mary DeGee saying, "We've heard there's an army marching on us." Frankie Scarface will have Frankie Snotnose and Mary Queen Scots removed to a solid castle. Keep them safe. Catherine de' Medici, though, will be the one to calmly think things through and say, "Hey, this probably isn't really anything to do with Betty and England. Could it possibly be, could it be that it's Cardinal Charles who put some fucking terrible policies into practice? Could it possibly be just that we've upset our own people with this being brutal to the Protestants and making them unhappy? Could this unhappiness go away if we just put in decent policies?" Catherine will issue the Edict of Amboise, which says all past religious crimes are forgiven, except for those who incited the current rebellion. Now, the thing didn't allow freedom of religion, though. To show good faith, some religious prisoners are released. Protestants are now thinking that they might get a fair shake from Catherine. Still, there are plenty of armed men hanging around, and Le Renaudi is busy deploying his men, ready to catch the De Guise brothers. The royal family have their soldiers out and about looking for rebels. Word comes in that the real leader of the rebels is a great prince, and oddly enough, who should turn up but La Conde, who you and I know is the great prince and leader of the rebels. But he's just coming in as himself, not as the leader of the rebels. Catherine will cleverly make him top number one bodyguard to Frankie Snotface. That means we'll know exactly where this guy is at all times. Nice move, Catherine. This is a great honour for La Conde, while being a subtle form of house arrest. 6th of March 1560, and about 15 rebels are caught in nearby woods. They seem to be glad they were caught, had no idea what they were supposed to have been doing, or what the plot was. Something about getting the king away from the De Guises, but yeah, we don't know much more than that, mate. 10 days later, and the captains of the rebels are captured. La Renaudi had been killed by an arquebus shot. With his death, the royal troops will now just wander around, killing any rebels or bringing them in for a killing. Frankie Scarface wants to send a message. Rebels are either tied in a sack and drowned or hung. Catherine will plead mercy for some, but that will be a no from the De Guises. Frankie Scarface's Mrs. and S will boo-hoo-hoo to Catherine about the cruelty. Well, just hang on, kiddo, we're nearly at the grand finale. The ringleaders need to be done. Frankie Snotface, his mum Catherine, and his young brother, 10-year-old Charles, can watch 52 heads come off. La Conde will also be there, watching his guys die one by one. Now, Catherine is smart. She wants information about this rebellion, even though it seems to be done and dusted. What she will find out was that there were two types of Huguenots. Of course. There's the true Protestants, the guys who were in it for baby Jesus, and the other mob were just the "we hate the illegal regime of the Guises. It's all political and about power and money." The "we hate the De Guises" mob want a council with the Bourbons in charge to run the regency. A propaganda war will kick off, and Catherine is linked with the De Guises. Catherine will of course be referred to as a whore, who has given France a liver for a king. Isn't that sweet? I suppose perhaps it's better than being called a baby-eating, pedophile, devil-worshipping Democrat. I don't know. Protestants are getting brazen, doing their magic show in full view. Worse, they're getting organised. Even worse and worse, they're visiting the gun shops. The brutality of putting down the rebellion has had the exact opposite of the desired effect. Who'd have thought that? Nobles, those very guys who know how to organise people, are defecting to the Huguenots. Yeah. Catherine will get a full meeting of the council in August 1560. Her rather intelligent points that she wants to get across are to make peace with England and get out of Scotland. France can't afford a stupid foreign war in Scotland. That might be a problem because Mary Queen of Scots and France and Frankie Snotnose, King of France and Scotland, won't be giving up their imaginary extra title, King and Queen of England. Fortunately for Catherine, Betty's okay with the kiddies making claims, not Betty will be absolutely insisting that teenage Mary and teenage Frankie Snotnose give up wearing that bloody English line on their clothes, and the teens will comply. Mary, Queen of Scots and France, will get the news about her mum dying around about this time. The writings of the delighted John Knox will also turn up. Her belly and loathsome legs did swell, and so continued till that God did execute his judgment upon her. The crown upon the queen's head was as seemly a sight as to put a saddle upon the back of an unruly cow. Oh, shit, they should cancel his Twitter account. And, oh, fuck, we shouldn't have heard that out loud. Mary, Queen of Scots, has just fainted again. Poor old thing. For Catherine O, the Scots problem has been resolved for now. The congregation are welcome to the place. In France, though, both Antoine de Bourbon and his brother Louis de Condé have not turned up to that council meeting. Oh, that's naughty. They've done a runner to get away from the de Guises. Catherine will open the council with the message that we want a policy that will keep my boy Frankie Snotnose on the big chair and make the common smelly types happy again. In comes the Chancellor, who's come up with a brilliant plan. One king, one law, one religion. Yeah, see, mate, that's not a brilliant plan. That's just fucking marketing. That's some slogan. That's what we expect from Scotty from marketing. It is not a workable policy, you dick. Time for Gaspard de Coligny to enter the story. He's the nephew of our old mate Montmorency, and he's actually a solid Protestant. Still, he had been a BFF of Frankie Scarface and did well in the various wars, got himself promoted to Admiral, and is on the council. He will present a petition saying how about letting the reformers practice their magic show, pending the well-thought-out decision of the council. It will be way more flowery than that, of course, and ask Catherine to be a Queen Esther from the old Book of Magic. And now, girls and boys, you know I'm going to tell you the story of Esther from the old Book of Magic, don't you?
Story time!
Esther was a Hebrew who was born in Persia, and before you can say cool magic trick, she became the Queen of Persia. King Ahasuerus had no idea she was a Jew, or he wouldn't have married her. Esther's uncle will score a job in this, and he will uncover a plot to kill the king, which will be noted. But he'll refuse to bow to the king. "Can't do it, mate," he says. "I'm a Jew, and we don't bow to Persian kings." In comes the evil vizier and says, "Well, I think I'll just kill all the Jews." King says, "Oh, that's a good plan, O evil vizier. Do it on the 13th day of Adar, and here's a royal decree to make it legal." Out goes the message, "Kill all the Jews on the 13th day of Adar." The uncle will go to Esther and say, "Hey, Esther, how about you ask the king to call off the killing of all Jews on the 13th day of Adar?" Esther will say, "Oh, sorry, no can do. If I go to the king without him asking for me, then that's death for me. All we Jews will have to fast for 3 days." Don't ask me why, my dear listener. I don't know. I didn't write this fucking story. 3 days later, and hungry Esther goes to the king without him asking for her, but he says, "Oh, all cool this time. What's up, kiddo?" "I just want to invite you to a feast, O king," she says. "Off we go for a feast where the uncle again offends the king, and the evil vizier will build a gallows to hang the bugger." The king then remembers that the uncle had uncovered a plot that saved his life. In comes the evil vizier ready to get the okay to hang the uncle, but the king will jump in and say, "What should I do for someone who I want to honour?" Evil vizier thinks that the king's talking about him, so he'll say, "Dress him up as you, O great king, and then lead him around on a nice horsey," with a herald saying, "See how the king honours a man he wishes to reward." "Great," says the king, "do that for my wife's uncle." The king is off for another feast with Esther and will say, "Love the grub, sweetie, so I shall grant you any wish you want." "Well," she says, "I am secretly a Jew, and the evil vizier has that plan to kill all Jews on the 13th day of Adar. So if you could call that off, then that would be great. Sure, he says, but I shall just slip out for a minute to have a good rage. The evil vizier will now beg Esther to save him from the king's rage. The king comes back, thinks the evil vizier is assaulting his missus, so evil vizier will be hung on the gallows that he just built to hang Esther's uncle. King says, oh, bugger, sweetie, look, not even I can reverse a royal decree to kill all Jews on the 13th day of Adar. Tell you what, though, I'll add a clause saying that the Jews can form their own army to kill all my mob, who I've ordered to kill them. That should do the trick. 13th day of Adar comes round and we'll have a battle. 10 of the king's sons and 500 other guys are killed. Next day, Esther says, can we do it all again? And in the end, the Jews will kill about 75,000 people. And that is why, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, even to this day, the Jewish people celebrate the 15th day of Adar. They call it Purim. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, the God who takes up our grievance, judges our claim, avenges our wrong, who brings just retribution upon all enemies of our souls and exacts vengeance for us from our foes. Blessed are you, Hashem, who exacts vengeance for his people of Israel from all their foes, the God who brings salvation. The end. And another fine example of shit stories from the old book of magic. Having told you the story of Esther, I have no idea why anybody asked Catherine de' Medici to be like Esther. The petition that had been presented had zero signatures on it, so Frankie Scarface will say, who gives a toss about it? Coligny will say, I could get 10,000 signatures if you like. Frankie Scarface will say, I can get 100,000 guys to sign in blood and then turn up to give you Protestants a bit of a thrashing. We'll all calm down and agree to adjourn to meet later. We can then have a churchy meeting for those guys to discuss the religious situation. Our wild boy of popes, Paul III, Gian Caraffa, had died. He lasted about 6 months longer than Reg Pohl, who Paul III had wanted in for a chat with the Inquisitors. When we try to understand mobs, it can be difficult. The ordinary types were not happy with Paul III and his Inquisition bullshit, so he was dying and the mob decided to riot. Paul III had had a statue of himself put up, so the mob will put a yellow hat on it, one of those hats that Paul III made the Jews wear. Then they'll decapitate the statue and toss it into the Tiber. Then the mob are off to the jails to free prisoners, including the Palazzo Inquisizione, where 72 religious prisoners will be freed, and will just tickle up the Inquisitor for the heck of it. The Inquisitor will not survive that tickling up. It'll be burn all the records. Let's have a poem. We love poems, don't we? Caraffa hated by the devil, and the sky is buried here with his rotting corpse. Erebus has taken the spirit. He hated peace on earth, our faith he contested. He ruined the church and the people, men and the sky offended. Treacherous friend, supplied with an army which was fatal to him. You want to know more? Pope was him, and that is enough. You. As usual, poetry's a bit suspect. Paul III's gone, so it'll be Pius IV, Giovanni de' Medici. Now this is the Milanese de' Medicis, who claim to be related to the Florence de' Medicis, but they're probably not. They're just trying it on, trying to big note themselves. Pius IV can read a mob, so it'll be a general pardon for the mob, then bring in Paul III's cardinal nephew to be strangled, and his relative Duke Giovanni Caraffa for a beheading. But there is a reason we're talking about him right now, and it's because he's worried about the Frenchy talk fest. Yeah, the Frenchies are looking to have a talk fest about religion, and the Pope doesn't like that. They might come up with, who knows what, some sort of Catholic-Protestant fusion, and we can't have that. It's conformity we want, with Rome calling the shots. We don't want some sort of new schismatic Gallic church. Oh, the troubles that baby Jesus caused, my dear listener. In France, though, Catherine will be praised for her moderation. The De Guises will be chastised but remain totally powerful, and the reformers can hope they will be allowed to do their own thing. Of course, we need to remember it is not all about religion. There are those who just want the De Guises out and the De Bourbons in. The militant part of the reforming Huguenots will get themselves armed and organised. They'll start attacking towns in the south of France, and it's looking a bit like it's going to be civil war. Catherine will call on her new relatives, the King of Spain and the Duke of Savoy, with the help-wanted message. Catherine will also get Frankie Snotnose to issue a summons to the Duke de Bourbon, and bring your brother Condé with you for a bit of the please explain. "Let's take up arms and fight to the death," say the two lads. No, they don't. They're not going to say that. They'll go off, and Louis Condé will be immediately arrested. The De Guises will do a nice treason trial that our 8th Henry would have been proud of. Louis is, of course, found guilty in that and will be sentenced to death. Now, Catherine's not too fussed on this. She's smart and she understands this could create a martyr and that would mean more strife. It certainly won't improve things, but guys like the De Guises think, well, just kill your enemies one at a time. That's how we'll proceed. Fate will intervene. 16th of November 1560, and Frankie Snotnose will faint. Nothing unusual, but perhaps that ear problem we noted before is something more serious. I don't know, meningitis? Doctors are in and they're talking about he's rotting from the inside. He's in a lot of pain, and he's stinking up the place. This, of course, will be kept secret, and the council has been summoned to meet on the 10th of December to witness Condé's execution. They've started to arrive. Meanwhile, Frankie Snotnose is just getting worse and worse with the swelling spreading and the boils spreading and the smells getting really bad. Nostradamus had predicted to Catherine that her eldest lad would die before he turned 18, and it looks like this is coming true. Should we do a special on Nostradamus? I don't know, maybe. All Catherine can do for now is watch her son helplessly. Oh, and now he's lost the power of speech. She will write to her sister-in-law Marguerite. "I do not know how to start this letter to you when I think of the terrible trouble and affliction that has pleased God to visit upon us, after so many sorrows and such unhappiness, to see the terrible and extreme pain that the king, my son, is suffering. Still, I hope our heavenly Father will not suffer me the agony of taking him from me. This kingdom cannot be saved unless God takes it into his hands." Council members are arriving, the king's really sick, and it's hard to keep something like that a secret, so the rumour mill is working. If Frankie dies, then Condé may get a reprieve, and the new king would be Frankie's 10-year-old brother Charles. That would mean a new regency, and that could be de Bourbon's big chance. Catherine would not have the same level of power with the de Bourbons as she has with the Guises, so she's going to want to stop any voting from happening. Oh, good news. Large amounts of pus are coming out of Frankie's ears, nose and mouth. Oh, that's not good news, is it? No, I suppose it's better to have the pus out than in. Catherine will make her move. Bring in Antoine de Bourbon for a chat with Catherine, Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles. Catherine will be straight out with it. "You've been plotting rebellion and that there is treason, mate." Antoine reckons he'll be having his head off alongside his brother, so he'll cave in. "No, not me. I've got zero ambition and just a little dick that doesn't swing one little bit." Catherine will handily have a document already prepared saying, "I don't want to be regent," and Antoine will happily sign it. The De Guises are now worried that they might be in strife because they used the Henry VIII style treason trial for Condé without actually having Henry's style of legislation in place to make it all legal. This would be judicial murder without the judicial bit being right, and that could put them in the shitter. Catherine will say, "If you boys get back in your box, then I will have dying Frankie Snotface sign a document saying it was he and not you who stitched up Condé. Now, Frankie, Charles and Antoine, you all need to kiss and make up." The lads will kiss and make up, and Catherine is triumphant. Sadly for Frankie Snotnose, all that pus coming out of his face has not helped at all. The abscess will spread to his brain, and on the 5th of December 1560, After a magnificent reign of 16 months, Frankie Snotface will be off to his heavenly reward, leaving Mary Queen of Scots, France, and she wishes England back to just Mary Queen of Scots and she wishes England. Catherine will give her one day to get over it, then demand the royal jewels back. Catherine will call the Privy Council to meet and declare her 10-year-old kiddie Charles King of France as Charles IX. Not so sickly as Frankie Snotnose, but he might be just a bit insane. Or not. Back to Catherine at the council. Since it has pleased God to deprive me of my elder son, I do not mean to abandon myself to despair, but to submit to the divine will and to assist and serve my king, my second son, in the feeble measure of my experience. I have therefore decided to keep him beside me and to govern the state as a devoted mother must do. Since I have assumed this duty, I wish all correspondence to be addressed in the first place to me. I shall open it in your presence and in particular in that of the King of Navarre, who will occupy the first place in the council as the nearest relative to the king. Such is my will. If any of you wish to speak, let him do so. Antoine de Bourbon, King of Navarre, is Catherine's offside and now as regent. In come the de Guises, and one by one, Frankie Scarface, Cardinal Charles, and Antoine de Bourbon will confess their earlier crimes and say, Frankie Snotnose made me do it, and I just want to support you, Catherine, and the new king. Catherine will verify, yeah, Snotface did do it. It's true, it's all true. What you have done was by the command of my son. The council can dissolve happily, knowing that Catherine will have Antoine de Bourbon in place to keep an eye on her. What they don't know is that she's got that letter that she'd made him sign, giving her absolute power. Catherine, at 41, is the ruler of France. Now, this episode, though, is supposed to be Mary, Queen of Scots, so we better start looking more closely at this girlie. Born 8th of December 1542 to King Jim V, who died 6 days later, and Mary of Guise, who's just died too. That makes Mary right now an 18-year-old orphan whose husband has just died. So she's an 18-year-old orphan widow. Yeah, Christmas shopping should be easy then. Just to tangle up the family business, Mary of Guise's mum was that Antoinette of Bourbon, brother of Charles of Bourbon, who was father of Antoine de Bourbon. Ah, okay, so we're all related. Cutting that short, Mary of Guise was the cousin of Antoine de Bourbon, making Mary Queen of Scots his second cousin, and why do we even care? I don't know. There may be a reason, but I can't think of it. I wish I hadn't said it. Let's just get Mary Queen of Scots up to date. Born in 1542, and the first 5 years of her life will be in Scotland, where she's being wooed roughly by Ted Seymour. That's that period where the English are building the Scotties as hard as they can, because Ted is sure that if they do that, baby Mary Queen of Scots will say yes to the marriage proposal from baby Ted, King of England. Just as well she didn't marry him, or she would have been a widow at 11 instead of 18. Mary will be off to France when she's 5, and we hope to safety, but there's the trip to get through first. Bad weather meant it took 6 days to get to France. The rudder was smashed, and all Mary's retainers were rather crook. Queen Mary, though, seems to have been a natural sailor, like her mother had been. The ship will make land at Roscoff, where 198 years later, Mary's great-great-great-grandson, Bonnie Prince Charlie, will also disembark. Or if you like, 468 years later, your podcaster disembarked to find out that the train left at the same time the bloody ferry arrived, with the next train being 3 fucking hours away. What can you do, my dear listener, except find a cafe, drink la café noir, smoke le ciggy galois, and discuss existentialism with la sweetie? If you go to Roscoff yourself, which I'm sure you won't now, I've explained that the ferry arrives at the exact same fucking moment the train leaves, leaving you with 3 hours to wait it out. But if you do, it will be the Chapel of St. Ninian, which marks the spot where Mary landed. Mary, though, is in France to be with her uncles, Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles, and be brought up under the fear of God. John Knox will say that she had gone to the inn, that in her youth she should drink of that liquor that should remain with her all lifetime, for a plague to this realm and a final destruction. Oh, God, I've got no idea what that fucking meant. Maybe it had some of those John the Revelator magic mushrooms.
While I spent 3 hours in Roscoff resolving the problem of a meaningless existence, Mary spent a few days there allowing her ladies to recover from the rigours of the journey. It will then be a fast train for me to Paris, but a slow trip for Mary over a number of days. Well, 2 months, in fact. We're in the time of King Henri and Queen Catherine de Medici, but they were out of town at the time. They had to go to the wedding of Antoine de Bourbon, who we now know is Mary's second cousin. See, maybe that's why I told you. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, he's getting married to Jeanne d'Albret, the only kitty of the King of Navarre. So when the King of Navarre dies, Antoine de Bourbon will become King of Navarre. King Henri had thoughtfully left detailed instructions for the care of baby Mary, Queen of Scots. She will be bunking down with Henri and Catherine's daughter, Elizabeth, who one day will find true happiness in the arms of King Phil of Spain. For now, though, Mary and Elizabeth will be BFFs. In comes Henri and Catherine, and what are their first impressions? Henri will say, "She is the most perfect child he's ever seen." Catherine will say, "This small Queen of Scots has only to smile in order to turn all French heads. She's a big hit at the Frenchy court. Her speech is very rustic, barbarous, and harsh, but spoken with such fine grace and formed in such a manner that she made it seem quite beautiful and agreeable in her, though not in others." Mary will become the leader of the kitty brigade. Henri and Catherine will have those 10 princes and princesses. Then Mary has the de Guy cousins and all sorts of kitties hanging around, really. Mary was tall, healthy, and confident. She had a big personality and was able to play nicely with others. She was generous and a happy kitty, and it didn't matter whether you were noble or a common smelly type, she would treat everyone the same. Mary was also concerned for other people. If that all sounds too good to be true, it isn't, but she's also headstrong and self-willed. She'll also be a bit passionate, which might get her into trouble later on. Mary will be a tomboy, but she'll get away with it, and it will make her even more popular at court. And in comes her betrothed, Frankie Snotnose.
Just one look, and I feel so hot.
It's going to be a love story. This is a short, puny, sickly, kitty, pasty-faced, slow, clumsy, and lethargic. Oh, and with that runny nose. Let's not forget the runny nose. Mary will turn out to be a natural nurturer. If Frankie is ill or miserable, he'll turn to Mary for comfort, and she'll respond with loving care. She's like a little mother to him, always taking his side and sticking up for him. Frankie, of course, will be besotted with Mary and totally devoted to her. Listen to you girly listeners out there all saying, "Oh, how sweet." It is. It's very sweet. Mary, though, can't really be called beautiful, and she's going to be a 6-footer, taller than most men. That will be compensated by grace and elegance like a mother. The not-so-pretty girl will have an animation that will light up the place. She's radiant with inner beauty, and she'll have a regal character while still being warm and friendly to everyone. You'd like her, my dear listener, I'm sure. Mary will be growing up in that hedonistic court where it's all the best food and wine, plenty of music, the latest in dancing, proficiency in the arts and high culture. Jousts and tournaments are still the go, while the newer fun like tennis, archery, falconry and horse racing are just coming in. We're developing ballets and masked balls are all the rage. Mary will become an all-round sportsperson with the horsey and bird hunting, and will be fond of all sorts of animals. Maybe not the ones she kills, I don't know. I don't know how that works, I don't kill animals. She'll be a highly skilled dancer, and our Betty in England will not be happy to hear that.
Betty wants to be the top of the pops in the terribly sexy Volta that she likes to do with Robert Dudley. Betty can play the virginal, but Mary's got a top singing voice and will accompany herself on the lute. See, these girls should have got together, formed a band, the Queen Cousins or something, instead of feuding over who does the better tap dancing. When Mary arrived in France, she had one big fat defect. Couldn't speak French. Yeah, that's a problem. King Henri will order lessons for her and all the servants and companions. Her girly companions, the four Marys, will be off to the convent at Poissy for some good old-fashioned nun education. I think Henri's trying to isolate Mary here so that she's forced to speak Frenchy. Henri will even try to have Lady Fleming replaced by a Frenchy governess, but that's too much for the de Guises. Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles are worried that Henri is trying to isolate Mary from them. Perhaps he's just trying to get Lady Fleming closer to his bedroom. Mary de Guise will also write to say Lady Fleming must stay as governess, so Henri will back down from removing her from governess, but of course he won't be backing down from trying to get his hands in her knickers. 2 years later, and Mary will get that happy visit from her mother, Mary de Guise. Mary de Guise stayed for about a year, during which time Mary will see, well, the death of her brother. Won't he'll die. Or half-brother, I guess. Frankie, the Duke de Longueville. Lady Fleming will be sent back to Scotland in disgrace for having failed to be discreet about being up the spout with Henri's kitty. Mary will then score a Frenchy governess, Francois de Estaminville, who is excitable and temperamental, just what you don't want. She can now be disruptive for a while. While Mary de Guise was in France, we had that plot to do harm to Mary Queen of Scots by Robert Stuart. Robert had been one of the guys who stuck a dagger in Cardinal Beaton and hung out at St. Andrew's Castle with guys like John Knox. The English had him at the time. King Henri demanded his extradition, which happened, so he could be hung, drawn and quartered. Let's get Mary to 10 years old, so we can hear reports that she is fluent in French and speaks like an adult. Mary can take up acting in the kiddies' little dramas that they put on, and also take up writing poetry, and I shall not be reading any of Mary Queen of Scots poetry to you at all. Mary is also getting an education in the arts and languages. Here's a bit of a letter she wrote to Betty. It was in Latin, but I'll do it in English. The true grandeur and excellence of a prince is, my dear sister, not in splendour, in gold, in purple, in jewels, and the pomps of fortune, but in prudence, in wisdom and knowledge, and so much as the prince ought to be different from his people in his habits and manner of living, so ought to have nothing to do with the foolish opinions of the vulgar. Firstly, a reminder to you, my dear listener, that prince is not gender specific. Both Mary and Betty see themselves as princes. As for the content, well, good on you, Mary, if only princes really believed that stuff. By 13, Mary is getting a standing ovation for her oratory in Latin. Not so much for her grammar, but for the charming manner of her delivery. Betty will be the better linguist. Frenchy governess, Francois d'Estaminville, had been selected for her strong Catholic faith to protect Mary from the filthy Huguenots, and Mary had to put up with that. Mary, though, will find out that Francois had been putting in bad performance appraisals about Mary as Dauphine, so Mary will look to have her replaced. The replacement will get the unanimous nod from Mary of Guise, King Henri, Queen Catherine de Medici, Frankie Scarface, and Cardinal Charles. So in comes Madame de Brenne, close friend of Diane de Poitiers. Yeah, King Henri's mistress has come up with a winner. Mary now is old enough to have her own household, and we can see that she's entertaining guests like Cardinal Charles for dinner. She's a grown-up girl, and so far as King Henri is concerned, she is governing Scotland through the advice of whoever he, as her guardian, appoints. That is in contradiction to Scotland's sovereignty and can't be binding on the Scotties. At that time, though, it was the Earl of Arran running the show in Scotland, and he'll be unable to resist Frenchy cash to agree with the Frenchy rules. With King Henri working from France and Mary de Guise working in Scotland, Arran will be out in any case, and while all that was happening, baby Mary Queen of Scots had another birthday and is now fully Mary Queen of Scots and will be able to appoint her own regent. Yeah, she'll pick Mum. We're all waiting anxiously to get the marriage done. These whole marriage contracts can get derailed, so the sooner we get Mary Queen of Scots to the chapel, the better. Trouble is, Mary of Guise is stuck in Scotland. If she leaves, then good luck coming back to the regency. King Henri was also busy with his stupid foreign wars. Happy for Mary is that Montmorency will stuff up a bit at St. Quentin, while Uncle Scarface will do well in Italy. The de Guises are in favour and Montmorency is waning. King Henri will formally write to the Scottish Parliament, inviting them to send envoys to discuss the terms of the marriage. Here they come, and as a priority, they want an agreement that Scotland will remain totally independent in the event that Mary dies without kiddies. Both Henri and Frankie Snotface will sign a guarantee on that. Henri will be all, no worries, good buddies, and let's have some more booze and laughs. Frankie Snotface will be called King of Scotland on the marriage, and if the crazy kiddies have a boy, then that boy will be the successor to both the Scotty and the Frenchy silly hats. If they have a girly kitty, then you, my dear listener, know that girlies can't inherit a Frenchy silly hat, but she surely can inherit a Scotty silly hat. This is all going well until Henri says, hey, can you send over the Scotty silly hat for my lad to put on? No way, they say. We've already lost the stone of scone to the Poms, so that silly hat won't be leaving our sight. Okay, who cares? We've made a good contract with the main points, so let's all sign it and have some more of that lovely Frenchy red wine. The Scotties have got no idea that Mary's already signed that other document saying all her rights to the Scottish silly hat and the English silly hat will go to France if she dies without a kitty, to Frankie Snotface. And the Scotties need to pay a shit ton of cash for upkeep in France and the Frenchy hardmen in Scotland, and that the Scottish Parliament cannot override that document that she signed. I know she's just a kitty, but it's very difficult not to be harsh on Mary for signing that stuff. What was she thinking? Not about Scotland, that's for sure. I guess her education was in the arts rather than, say, political science, and her uncles were the guys who got that signature from her. But it's really disappointing, and she'll be toast if the Scotties ever find out about it. It might be that she's just naive, but really this is high treason. Queen or no queen, it's treason against the nation. Sunday, 24th of April, 1558, we can all go to Notre Dame for a nice wedding. She appeared 100 times more beautiful than a goddess of heaven, so that the universal voice of the court and the great city was that of 100 and 100 times happy must be the prince who went to join himself in marriage with this princess. That if the kingdom of Scotland was anything of a prize, the queen was far more precious than it. For even if she had neither sceptre nor crown, her person alone was worth a kingdom. Yeah, a bit over the top there, gossip magazines. Let's let them have days of feasting, then it's time for the Scotty envoys to go home, and it will be food poisoning. 4 of them dead. Was this deliberate? No sort of inquiry, so it probably was. Scotties being all superstitious are worried about this, and then King Henri again sends for the Scotty silly hat. We want to put it on Frankie Snotface's head, he says. Scotties will prevaricate. Mary and Frankie Snotface will settle down to wedded whatever, but probably not bliss. Now don't forget, Frankie's balls haven't dropped, so there won't be much banging going on. Mary will spend more time with Catherine de' Medici. Mary by now is getting on to being that 6 foot tall, while Catherine is short and dumpy. There's also a generation gap, and the two women are very different. Mary's got no intrigue about her. She's an open book. Catherine is secretive and cunning. Still, they have concern for the dolphin in common. Time for Lady Forley Princess then Queen Mary to die over in England, and Henri will order that Mary be proclaimed Queen of Scotland, England and Ireland, and Dauphine of France. That might look a bit stupid to us, but we know how it's going to work out. For Henri, it was probably the right move.
the English may have rejected Protestant Betty, and if they did, then that would leave the door open wide for Mary. Staking the claim then was right for these guys. Besides, it will lead to the Treaty of Cambresis between England, France and Spain, where Phil, having missed out on English Betty, will get Frenchy Betty, who will turn out to be the love of his life. Ah, sweet, isn't it? Mary and Betty will exchange letters saying how much they love each other. Might not be true, but it's nice. In comes the Duke of Alva on behalf of Phil for a proxy wedding with Elizabeth. That's Frenchy Elizabeth, of course. And we can have a tournament, and King Henri can go down and die a week later. 17-year-old Mary, Queen of Scots, is now Queen of France. Catherine de Medici is grief-stricken, and Mary will help out with the diplomatic stuff. Mary will also make sure she gets the queenly jewels from Catherine and Diane de Poitiers. The De Guise faction is top of the pops, with Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles being regents. Yeah, sure, Catherine de Medici is a regent as well, but they've got a sign lined at the moment. Mary may be unwell. Stupidly, we'll go down that path that Mary Tudor had gone down. Pain in the gut must mean I'm up the spout. For fuck's sake, Frankie Snotface does not have functioning testicles. How can she be up the spout? From the descriptions, it seems like this one is porphyria. That's a liver disorder that will be with her pretty much for her whole life. Symptoms of an attack include abdominal pain, chest pain, vomiting, confusion, constipation, fever, high blood pressure, and a high heart rate. It's all happening though. April 1558, marriage. July 1559, Henri's dead. February 1560, the Scotties will sign a treaty with Betty in England. June 1560, Mary Guise will die. Oh, it's all in a rush, isn't it? The next month, Mary Queen of Scots will have to stop the boo-hoo-hooing and sign off on the Treaty of Edinburgh, which will remove the Frenchy troops from Scotland. Mary and Frankie Snotnose must agree to renounce the claim to the English silly hat and remove the English lions from their arms. August 1560, and the Congregation Lords will pass an act, the Protestant Confession of Faith. The Pope is toast for Scotland. The Latin magic show is illegal. Their queen might be Catholic, but her country is Protestant and being run by hard men, religious fanatics, under the thumb of that rabid John Knox. It's not going well. December 1560, and Frankie Snotnose will slip into a coma. Nice for him, because he won't have to watch his wife and mother arguing about whatever. Yeah, they're going to be at each other's throats. Frankie will die, Catherine de Medici will win the Game of Thrones. Mary Queen of Scots is the biggest loser. Mary Queen of Scots will always think of Frankie Snotface as her one great love and true husband. Mary will need to dress in the white robes of mourning and go into the darkened room for the magic number of 40 days. You might remember Henry's sister Mary Tudor did that when King Louis died from too much banging. It's the wait and see whether there might be a bun in the queenly oven. Her uncles, Frankie Scarface and Cardinal Charles, have got no time for her at the moment. They're busy saving themselves, with Catherine de Medici having taken over France. Mary will have some sort of breakdown. She won't get up, won't eat. She'll just boo-hoo-hoo. What's the Venetian ambassador got for us? Everyone will forget the death of the late king except the young queen, his widow, who being no less noble-minded than beautiful and graceful in appearance, the thought of widowhood at so early an age, and the loss of a consort who was so great a king, and who so dearly loved her, and also that she is dispossessed of the crown of France with little hope of recovering that of Scotland, which is her sole patrimony and dower, so afflict her that she will not receive any consolation, but brooding over her disaster with constant tears and passionate and doleful lamentations, she universally inspires pity. Yeah, so he's saying that basically, well, she's no longer Queen of France because Frankie Snotnose is dead. She's no longer Queen of England because she had to sign that away to get a peace treaty. And he's saying that she's not really Queen of Scotland because they don't fucking want her. And I think that's where we might leave our poor old Queen of... Well, she's not old. I think that's where we'll leave our poor young Queen of Scots, in a darkened room, and she can just stay there and boo-hoo-hoo all week. Yeah, the Marvelous Shadows there with Apache. Here you got there, Hank Marvin, Bruce Welsh, Jack Harris on bass and Tony Meehan on drums. And a young Mick Fleetwood heard that Tony Meehan on drums and said, I want to do that. And he did. But for us, this to get us into a little bit of historical fiction. For me, it's been that Christian Cameron again. I'm back into his Tyrant series, book 3, Funeral Games. So, at the end of book 2, our hero died, and I thought that might be about it. And about 2 sentences into this one, the heroine's dead as well. But they did have kiddies, twins, and people want to kill those kiddies. As usual, this Christian Cameron's books are just marvellous. Real page-turners. We're set at the time just after Alexander the Great is dead, so his generals are all busy squabbling over who's going to be the ruler of the empire. Our twins will end up with Ptolemy in Alexandria. Of course, Ptolemy will found that long, long line of Ptolemies and Cleopatras who will rule Egypt. Ptolemy was also the guy that gave us the Septuagint, old book of magic, didn't he? Got it translated from Hebrew to Greek, and then it was translated into Latin for we European types. Christian Cameron, the Tyrant series, thoroughly recommended, but for us it's a matter of what we go out with. And I'm right into that Jen Psaki from the Democrats, so we might go out with a bit more of Circle Back, but this time we'll have the Kenny Copeland remix by WTF Bra. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I often note I'm going to circle back. I hate to disappoint conservative Twitter, but I am going to circle back on a number of things, as we often do directly.
Circle back.
I hate to disappoint you.
Circle back.
That's an excellent question.
Circle back.
I hate to disappoint you, but we will venture to circle back. This is such a good question. I have not had the opportunity to dig into that. I'll circle back.
It was a massive dump. To this day, everyone's trying to figure out where did it come from.
I'm not aware of anything, but we'll circle back.
This uncircumcised Philistine, who does he think he is?
As a mom myself, I want to know all the details. I have to circle back.
Come on, man.
You know what I mean?
I will venture to get you an answer on that, and maybe we can talk about it, and you'll circle back. I will have to circle back on that one.
Circle back.
But we'll circle back.
Circle back.
But I will have to circle back with you.
Circle back.
Let me give you a very specific example.
Yeah. I'll circle back.
I hate to disappoint you.
Circle back.